Now. Real people. Real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Laura Ann Moore is a certified financial coach, financial well-being speaker, and the host of the Mind Money Soul podcast. And we're in the height of the cost of living crisis here in Ireland, as you well know, with people pinned to the collar. But Laura believes you should be able to feel good about your money and use it as a tool to live a better life. And she joins me on the line. Laura, good afternoon or good evening to you. How are you doing? I'm losing track of time. I'm losing track of time, Laura, I swear to God. Yeah, well, I do a podcast as well, and I work on the radio at night, and I tend to forget what time of the day it is. Day is just a blur to me now at this stage. But Laura, you know, there was a question I was asking somebody earlier on there, which was, does money buy you happiness? You know this old kind of cliche, oh, money doesn't buy you happiness. It kind of does, doesn't it?
I think it's kind of one of those arguments where it does and it doesn't. There's a basic level, I guess, of happiness we could call, like, but it's more in terms of survival, you know, like having shelter, being able to afford food, being able to pay your bills. But it gets to a certain point where money is no longer the thing that increases your happiness. Like, there's so much research out there about it. And one of the things I always say is the three kind of answers when it comes to does money buy me, you know, better financial well-being or more happiness, is if you work more hours to make more money, you have less time for leisure. And as we know, leisure is the thing that brings us a lot of joy. So the whole, you know, you have less time to play and have fun.
Yeah, of course.
Then you have things like lottery winners, like really sadly, lottery winners that are in millions of pounds, you know, on the jackpot. They usually end up going bankrupt and having a lot of like mental health issues afterwards because of the way they manage it. So it comes down to a lot of like, it's less about how much you have and more about what you do with
what
you have.
My mother had a theory on that years ago. My mother said, you know, if you come from nothing and you get a lot of money, it'll destroy you. And I understand the point she was trying to make in her own way, in a very old fashioned way, that if you're wealthy from day one, or you got a good job at, say, 18 years of age, and you earn good money and you save your own money and you're working hard for your own money and you become wealthy, well, you're used to managing money. But if you're living, say, on a very low income and a minimum wage, and then somebody comes along and gives you a lottery ticket, you win yourself 15 million, you probably don't know how to manage it. And you just go off and buy fancy cars, loads of jewellery, and drink too much. So you probably will destroy your life.
Yeah, I always say how you manage £10 is how you'll manage £10,000. So getting good financial habits and behaviours in first, before you make more money, before you come into money, is the best thing you can do. Because then you're learning how what to actually do with it, and you don't just get it and go, oh, and then, like you say, go crazy and spend it all.
Yeah, we were talking earlier on in the show about, you know, would you charge your kids rent to live in your house, et cetera, et cetera. Then we started talking about, you know, when you're raising your kids, you should teach them the respect for money. By the age of 22, you'd save 15 grand. I can tell you, most 22-year-olds don't have 15,000. They don't have 15 quid. So, I mean, so how did you manage? I mean, did you have a good job? Were you working two jobs? Or how did you manage to save 15,000 by 22?
So, basically, I got a full-time job when I was 19. I chose not to go to university because I actually wanted to become an actress. So I wanted to go to drama school. And you needed £15,000 per year. So that was the goal in my mind. At 19, I was clearly very delusional because I was like,
as
okay,
we all are at that age.
I was like, sure, challenge, bring it on. And I was living at home at the time, but my mum did charge me rent, and I paid my way. I paid for, you know, some of the groceries, and I paid for things with my. But I just, when I got this full time job, I used this concept of paying myself first. So every payday that I got paid, instead of, you know, making sure I had money for bills, spending money on going out with my friends and doing all the nice things and seeing what I had left over to save, I did it the other way around. So I would say, right, to meet my goal, how much can I afford to save this month? That goes away first, and then I spend what is left over. And you kind of flip it the other way around.
Okay, so you were giving yourself spending money, essentially.
Yeah. For the future.
Yeah. That's a pretty good idea, yeah.
Yeah, so giving myself money for the future and then spend the money in that moment. And I basically split my accounts out. This is one thing that I tell to all of my community, my audience, is having two separate bank accounts. So one where all of your income goes and your bills go out of, and then a spending account. So then that way, when you're just spending throughout the month on all your normal things, you don't have a panic in the middle of the night like, oh no, have I just spent my rent money on this dinner out tonight. You're separating the needs and the wants. And that is so good for your, I guess, like financial health. It just makes you feel better. Helps you sleep better at night.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I know that feeling too. That's your feeling too. I mean, you've saved over 40 grand now. I mean, I don't know how old you are now. It's always rude to ask a lady your name, her age. But you've saved over 40,000, which is no mean task, by the way, you know, unless, of course, you're a multimillionaire and you're earning lots of money. Save 40 grand so far.
Yeah, so basically when I was between the ages of 19 and 22, I saved £15,000, spent it all travelling. And then when I came back, I saved another 25 grand before I moved to London, so 40,000 in total. And honestly, there was just like, it was the mindfulness around money. I talk to people a lot about mindfulness, and we spend most of our days on autopilot. Everything is like, do this, do that, and you kind of get to the end of the day. It's about like when you drive to work in the morning, you're like, I don't really know how I got there. You just went into autopilot, and we do the same thing with spending money.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, yeah, it's so scary. You're like, what?
Did I really go through all those traffic lights? I don't remember them. Yeah.
Exactly. So we do the same thing with our money, and especially, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this will relate, if you have a bad day, it's like, oh, I'll treat myself, or oh, I deserve this thing. And I'm a big believer, spending money is just important as saving, like enjoying your money is important, but do it with intention.
If I'm feeling a bit down, I go on to Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me feel better. I bought something that I like, or I buy something for my wife or whatever it is. Just something, I don't know, it doesn't have to be too big, but it just gives me some sort of feeling that I've done something.
Yeah.
I mean, it is hard. Money is harder to manage now than it was when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Because when I was younger, we had cash. So we kind of knew, and I was saying to the audience earlier on, when you reached into your pocket, and I reached into my pocket earlier on, and I took out 70 cent. You know, if this was 20 years ago, I'd reach into my pocket and take out 70 quid. So, but because we knew how much we had in our hand. But nowadays, with the tapping and the cards, the phone, and I use my watch as well to pay now. I mean, we kind of just don't know until every now and again the app says, you've spent £72 today, or whatever it is. And then you kind of go, oh God. So we kind of don't realise how quickly we're spending it sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it's you saying about, oh, I get this feeling after I like spend money. When we spend money, especially online, we actually get a dopamine release. So dopamine is like one of the happy chemicals. So there's something biologically going on in your brain when you do spend money. So that feeling is a real feeling. And shopping online is worse because you like have the anticipation of it like showing up in the door. But most of the time, you end up forgetting about that thing in like 2 days. It goes to the back of the wardrobe. You know, you don't open it out of the box for a week. Like, it always is just down to the action. So one thing I always say is like, find ways to change your emotional state without spending money. And if you want to track it, like you say, we don't have cash anymore and we're getting further and further away from being, you know, a cash society. So there's so much technology out there that can help you with managing your money, like different apps, finance apps that, you know, tell you as you go. And I always say to people, create a budget at the start of the month, like what is it you intend to do, and then track it throughout the month and make sure you're on track. Because people usually do the first part and then they forget about it 2 days later and then they're like, oh yeah, I had a budget, I forgot I had to stick to that.
Yeah.
So making sure that you're tracking it.
When you talk about financial well-being, by the way, because, you know, obviously when you're low on money, it takes down your mood as well. And when you've more money, it brings up your mood a little bit because people tend to feel happier at the start of the month than they do at the end. I mean, how do you solve that problem? So in other words, what you're saying to me is once you keep on your track, it'll keep your your actual physical health as well as your mental health. It keeps that in better shape, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So I did this piece of research about 2 or 3 years ago, which was about the connection between money and mental health. And it basically highlighted that if you have poor mental health, it makes managing your money harder. And then if you're struggling to manage your money, it makes your mental health poorer. So it's like this downward spiral. So what you kind of want to do is find little effective ways that help you manage your money so that you can improve your mental health. And it's going to help things like helping you sleep better, improving your mood, your productivity. Like, there's so many connections between money and your mental health / your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So even doing little things, and one of the biggest things I say to people is getting to know your numbers. You have to know what's going on. And a lot of the time we ostrich, we stick our heads in the sand. But I always say to people, you not looking in your bank account or at your finances isn't going to give you more money. It'd be lovely.
People are like that. They kind of don't want to look. Yeah. They're afraid to look.
Yeah, exactly. And that fear is like when you have tangible data and you go, oh, this is what I'm working with, even if it kind of sucks and you wish you had more, at least you can make a plan.
Do you know what I do? When I'm looking at my banking app, right? So say, you know, a particular time of the day, I might be thinking, oh, I wonder if I know. So anyway, I go into my banking app, right? And just as I'm putting in my PIN number, in my head, I'm guessing what my balance is. And I have a figure in my head. If it's below the figure, I'm feeling a bit down. If it's above the figure, I go, oh, that's all right. I feel good now. So I always guess the amount before I open the app. Whereas years ago, I would have just looked at my wallet and I knew how much I had.
Yeah. You could trick yourself, couldn't you? You could, every time you open your bank account, tell yourself the number's going to be lower and then it'll always be higher and then you'll always just be happy.
No, then you're being a fraud. So on your podcast, by the way, Mind Money Soul podcast, I mean, what sort of stuff are you talking about? Are do people sending questions to you on a regular basis or how does that work?
So my podcast is me talking. I don't interview anybody. It's just little old me. And I do like 10 to 20 minute episodes specifically talking about the emotional, the practical and the spiritual sides of money. So I take a very holistic approach that combines like neuroscience. So really understanding why we spend and why we do the things we do. Because I always say to people, why is it that as humans we have good information, for example, spend less than you earn, and yet it's so hard to do? Because our brains are, they're a muscle, they have a sort of mind of their own. So really looking at the brain side of it, and then I look at the practical side. So I talk about different accounts, I talk about investing and saving and money management strategies. And then the spiritual part is more talking about the role that money plays in your life. So my opinion, like you mentioned at the start, money can be an amazing tool to help you create things that you want in your life. And there's a massive societal belief that money is bad and that it can make you a bad person, it makes you greedy, you're selfish. But you know, if you go somewhere like that's a societal belief, because if you go to America, they love money.
Oh, they do.
They'll be on stage and they're like, I've just made $1 million. And everyone's like, woohoo. whereas here, you're not allowed to ask anybody what their salary is, or you're not allowed to ask how much their house was. So
yeah, the Americans like to boast about things like that. They're quite open about how much they've spent on their homes or how much money they earn or whatever it is. Whereas we're even worse than the British. We're so secretive. Like, you daren't ask anybody here how much they earn. Yeah. Jesus.
Exactly. And the issue with that is it makes everyone feel ashamed, because they're like, who knows all the secrets about money, but no one wants to talk about it. Then people are scared to ask questions, which makes them not be able to do the things that they, you know, would be helping them with their finances. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of the stuff that I do talk about on my podcast. And I've got a community of about 50,000 people across different social media platforms. So when they send me different questions, I'm like, that's a great question to answer on the podcast.
Okay. So that gives you the kind of content for the podcast. Okay. I'm looking at some of the text coming in here. Somebody says, ask her, don't call her. Call her Laura, please. Thank you. Ask her, because I used to always say that's my mother, or I'd say she or whatever, or her. She'd say, who's she, the cat's mother? Anyway, ask her, how is a single person supposed to get on the property market if you can only borrow 4 times your annual salary and the average yearly salary is 45,000, that's 180,000. You wouldn't get a dog box. Well, you have to meet somebody else then. I'm sorry. Anyway, it is very difficult. And in Britain, it's more or less exactly the same as it is here in Ireland. Actually, it's probably worse in Ireland at the moment. The property market is just mental at the moment, like €400,000 for a dog box of a 3-bed house. So how do you get on the property market when nobody's earning enough money anymore?
Yeah, I think that is honestly one of the biggest issues, like just in general at the moment, because people, who were around in the 60s and 70s and were buying houses then, it was so much more affordable. Now it's way less affordable, and the disparity between like average wages and average house prices is crazy. So I'm single as well, and I have like a single girl community, and we talk a lot about this. And you know, they say, if I'm single, how am I going to buy a house? Do I have to wait around until I meet someone? You know, what's the kind of deal with that? I mean, I went on a double date this weekend, so maybe I don't have to worry about this soon. But
Laura, was he a nice guy?
He was a nice guy. He's lovely.
Okay, so, if he's listening, you're well in there. Okay, go ahead. But you live in so do you live in London? Is it?
So I live, I live in South London, and as you can imagine, house mental prices here are like, I could probably afford to buy a shed, maybe.
Yeah. or live in the back of a car. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. In relation to just finally, people who feel stressed or anxious over money, You know, can we build a positive relationship around money? Because money, it either has a positive relationship or a negative relationship. There's never some sort of neutrality in the middle, really, is there?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that you can absolutely change your relationship with money. I guess what I would say to anybody listening is the way that our, like when we're born, we are not able to take anything and be analytical about it. So everything we hear from our parents, growing up, things like that, you're kind of as a young person going to take to be true. For example, my dad always used to say to me, money doesn't grow on trees. So I built up a belief around that. And then kind of as you get older, it plays out in different ways. But I would just say, like, listen to the language that you use about money. Is it usually positive? Is it negative? And like, what are some things you remember about your childhood to do with money? Because there could be a lot in that.
Yeah, of course. Then, yeah.
And then when it comes to like getting a good relationship with money, it's about building trust with yourself. So if you feel like you're not a very good saver, all you need to do is save maybe £5 a month, you know, successfully to be able to call yourself a saver. And it's like building up that trust with yourself. Obviously, £5 a month isn't going to be the thing that makes you rich.
No, certainly not. It's not going to get you 40 grand anyway. Yeah.
But it helps you build up trust with your own abilities. And if you can build yourself a little, what we like to call an emergency fund, so a little pot of money that's there for emergencies, over time it will help you feel less fearful and less worried about money because you know that there's a little something there. So just building up a little nest egg is really important as well.
Okay, well, look, if people want to get more information, of course, you can go to your podcast, which is called Mind Money Soul, the Mind Money Soul podcast. Or if they want to get more information or looking for advice or whatever it happens to be, where's the best place to catch you, Laura?
So, yeah, aside from my podcast, you can either come and find me on Instagram, or which my Instagram name is Laura Ann Moore. Or I have a website as well, which you can contact me through, which is www.mindmoneysoul.co.uk.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.